Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Dira Morby Film Podcast. And we're coming to you a little bit. We've got two podcasts which are basically coming live at the same time. And this is due to a few editing issues, but you know, I'm sure you can fit us all in this week.
That's what she said.
No, I've never gotten that. Well, I'm Martin Deere, and that was obviously Rowan Morby.
Rowan Morby with the innuendos, hello everybody.
Right, okay, so the topic of discussion today will be what we've been watching, and then our journey through cinema based on the 1001 Movies to See Before You Die list. This week is Russ Meyer's Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. And then the main topic of conversation will be something that me and Rowan have wanted to get into going back quite a while now since the start of this year, which is comic book movies and the comic book genre. Rowan's not really a fan over the last couple of years, whereas I sort of am. So we'll dive into that. I'm sure it'll be a bit of a feisty one. But I'll let Rowan take it away with what he's been watching this week.
Okay, so then, what have I been watching this week? Well, the beginning of the week started with a bit of a hangover from the Halloween movies that I was watching. So, let me think. I watched Scream 3, Scream 4. Clearly, the weaker half of the Scream franchise. I think by the time Scream 3 came around, it was pretty tired. Scream 4 is a better movie. But again, the final third of Scream 4 is a bit of a mess, to be quite honest. I think they really should have left it with the first two, which I think were splendid films. But I thought, you know, when you watch one and two, and there's two more still to be watched, you've got to do the whole series, really. But I probably will never watch Scream 3 and 4 ever again. I haven't seen them at least two or three times now. So that was that. I watched John Carpenter's The Fog, 1980, for the first time. It's one of the Carpenters that has escaped me all these years. Wasn't a big fan, to be honest. Wasn't at all scary or chilling. I wasn't even really a big fan of the plot line. Looked a bit cheap compared to his other movies, especially compared to, say, Halloween or The Thing. Wasn't a fan of that one, I'm afraid. Have you seen The Fog, Martin?
I haven't, no.
No, I can't recommend it. It's a shame, because I like John Carpenter. He's a very good director, but this one was not one that I would ever revisit again. What else to watch? I've watched Poltergeist on Halloween night. Great film, one of my favourite horrors.
I've not really seen that since I was a kid. I don't believe in ghosts, but they really shit me up when I watch them in films. Which you obviously wouldn't understand since you don't get scared.
Well, exactly. I'm just Mr. Hardman, exactly. But yeah, Poltergeist is, I think it's a cracking movie. It's got that Spielberg touch about it that I think other movies often miss. I know he didn't direct it, but there is speculation or theories that Spielberg did direct this movie. But of course, all the posters and the credits will just say produced by Steven Spielberg. But I love that, the practical effects and some of the CGI work in it. I think a lot of it still holds up today in terms of just visual wow factor that I guess audiences must have had in 1982. But, watching it today, I still get that. I don't necessarily find it scary, but I do find it thrilling and a bit chilling, especially because you've got the little girl involved, which, of course, is always makes these sort of movies always a bit more.
Because kids are creepy as fuck.
They are, aren't they? They are. I think the ghosts were scared of the kids is what it was.
There's a horror film.
Oh, shit. Yeah, we can make that. Let's talk about that after the podcast.
Yeah.
yes, that's one of my favourite horror movies, for certain. What else have we got here? So, watched a couple of 80s action movies, because I bought a few recently. So I watched Stallone in Cobra. That's one of my favourites of his, actually. It's looking back at it now, it's crazy the way it's directed, and it's basically got like two music videos in the middle, which are is absolutely bizarre. One of them is Bridget Nielsen's dancing with some really weird little robot things. It's all crazy. It's pretty mental. You'll never get a film like Cobra being made again, that's for certain. But I think in terms of the action department, it delivers, no question about that. It's violent, it's tough, it's everything you want from an 80s action movie. And then on the other side of that coin, you've got Red Heat, which I also watched. So Schwarzenegger and James Belushi. And even as a kid, when I was watching Schwarzenegger movies, pretty much every week, Red Heat was one that I hardly watched. And I think there's a reason, because it's pretty damn boring, to be honest. Not a lot happens in Red Heat. I mean, there's no action sequences until maybe 15 minutes from the end. And even though it's directed by Walter Hill, who, of course, did 40 Hours and another 40 Hours, along with many other movies, it's pretty dull. It's pretty damn dull. So that's a buddy cop movie that really needed an injection of action. But I'm really surprised that it actually got made with the likes of Schwarzenegger. I watched American Werewolf in London for the first time. Yeah, first time watch. I've had the DVD for, I don't know, years, years and years and years. And I never got around to watching it. So I thought Halloween week, good place to start. Wasn't really much of a fan, I'm afraid to report.
I've not seen it for a couple of years. Can't say it really blew me away, but it's a bit of a cult one, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and I think that the scene where he transforms is absolutely superb still. I love it. I mean, I've seen that before, on clips and stuff. But yeah, the movie itself, nah, not for me, I'm afraid to say. It's a shame, because I was looking forward to watching that, having heard lots and lots of good things about it previously. But no, it wasn't one that I will go back to. It's a bit of a shame. Bit upset about that, but there you are. Can't like them all. What about yourself, Mark? I've got a few more to go through, but do you want to hit me with some of yours?
I watched Scream 4, but then I watched on Tuesday, I watched Carrie.
Oh, the new one, or the
The
original?
original. Yeah, the
Ah, good.
original. Sorry,
Good
I didn't have
stuff.
my microphone down there. Did you hear me? Yeah, you obviously must have done. I watched the original Carrie. You have to wonder when you watch that, how is this remake going to fare, really?
Yeah.
I know we touched on Carrie, just a little bit last week, but yeah, that opening sequence is pretty amazing. Really, it's all sort of dreamlike and sensual, and really, it subverts expectation by having that dreamlike quality, and then going into sort of the nightmare that Carrie is experiencing. It's a pretty great scene,
It is.
really
Yeah, it
well
is.
directed. Again, there's quite a few notable scenes throughout that film. It really does stand out as a pretty terrific entry into the horror genre. But it's just a pretty great film, really, in general, focusing, as we say all the time, focusing on character over story, really.
Exactly.
But that was it. That was all I got round to watching, unfortunately. Although actually no, I did. I was on the train today. Pretty long train journey. I watched Batman 1989.
Ah.
As its faults, but yeah, you can't fail to love that film.
No, I think we'll probably might touch on that one towards the end of the podcast.
Yes, probably. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Because it's certainly one I like. So going back to what I got around, so I watched Machete Kills earlier today, the sequel
Oh
to
yeah.
Machete, which came out a couple of years ago. My God, this is an awful film. It is boring as fucking sin, which is crazy because, I mean, did you see Machete, the first one?
I didn't know.
Did you see Grindhouse?
Yes.
He did. Well, you know, then Machete was came out of a trailer that was in the Grindhouse double bill, and I quite like Machete for what it is. It was good, stupid fun, but it meant to be that it knew what it was, and you got from it exactly what it wanted to give you, and nothing more, and that's fair. But Machete Kills, it's not shot in the kind of grindhouse dirty way that the other one was. It looks a lot more high budget. It's got people like fucking Lady Gaga in it, which is weird because, why? Who? It's weird, really strange. But ultimately, it's just so boring. I mean, it's only 1 hour and 40 minutes, but it feels like 2 hours and 40 minutes. It drags and drags and drags, and it's just not fun. It's not funny. There's nothing clever about it. It's like a piece of crap. It really is like a complete piece of crap, and I can see why it did zero business at the box office. It's just trash, utter trash, but not in a good way. Not in a good way, like the first one was, which was trash but fun. So yeah, never ever watch that. Come on, I remember a couple of weeks ago I started watching Catherine Bigelow movies in order, and I took a bit of a gap from that, but I've gone back and I watched her 2000 movie The Weight of Water, which was a first watch for me. Odd film. I think it's easily her worst, because I've seen all of her films now. It tells two parallel stories. One is in, I think, 1870s, about some settlers in America, and a murder is committed and a man goes on trial, and then the other story takes place in the same area but present day, and you've got a reporter and a husband who's a Pulitzer Prize winner, and they're on a boat with their friends, and she is kind of doing some reporting on the murders from the past, and I think she's trying to look at the evidence, understand if the right person got convicted and all the rest of it. But the film just doesn't work because I think the story in the past would have been enough. You could have made a probably a decent, interesting movie out of that, but the stuff in the present just is not interesting enough, and because of that, because you've got two halves making a whole, the whole movie just doesn't work. It hasn't got enough drive and focus, which is, not something you necessarily would associate with Catherine Bigelow, especially in her later work. But this is, yeah, it's easily her weakest film. I said there was something good in there, but unfortunately, it didn't come out. And then I watched K-19, The Widowmaker, Harrison Ford and Liam Neeson. I think that's definitely her best movie of the first six that she made. So that's from Near Dark through to this one. So in other words, before The Hurt Locker. I really quite enjoy it. The accents are all over the place by Harrison Ford and Liam Neeson. God knows what part of Russia they're supposed to be from. Aside from that, yeah, it's good. It's got a good tension. It's well shot, really good camera work in this close quarters submarine. It's based on a true story, which couldn't have been told for like 30 years after the event, which makes it, really quite tragic in a way. Good, solid submarine based thriller. I've seen it quite a few times now. And it always delivers the goods. Aside from that, the only one I'd watched was Drinking Buddies, which
Ah,
was
yes, I
released
saw
in
you review that.
cinemas. Oh, thanks. It was released in cinemas in the UK this Friday, but it's been out on video on demand for a while, because it came out in the States a couple of months ago. Good movie. I really quite enjoyed this one.
And what's
I
that,
think
sorry?
the Drinking Buddies.
Yeah. What it's about?
It's oh, oh, it's about. Sorry, right. Two couples. there's a guy and a girl who work together. They're not in the relationship, but they work together. But there's clearly something more than just friends between them. There's an attraction there. There's a flirtation. They're really quite close. And then the guy's girlfriend, she wants to settle down and get married, but then something happens with her, which, you know, kind of questions their relationship. But what I liked about this movie, and it is, you know, it's not so much a rom-com in the way that, say, Sleepless in Seattle or You've Got Mail is, but it's more like a dramedy, you know, comedy drama and that sort of thing. But the thing that makes it work is the improvisation. It's clearly improvised, or part, at least only partly scripted. And I think the cast do a really good job of making intelligent scenes out of unscripted work. Olivia Wilde is really, really good in this. Now, I think she's an actress who's been in quite a lot of high-profile, high-budget movies, which haven't really delivered. And the thing is, it's kind of soured her credibility, I think, as an actress, you know, not being much more than, say, just a pretty face. But in this, it goes to show, yeah, you know, she can act. She's really good in perhaps smaller movies than she is necessarily suited for big budget stuff. It's a good movie. And I like the fact that the relationships don't always go the way that you expect them to in other romantic dramas, romantic comedies. There's a good sense of realism about what you can and can't say. And as you probably know, like in real life, mine, there's stuff, you know, between men and women that you end up saying a lot of stuff, but you never actually get round to what you want to say because you're almost scared to say it.
Yeah.
So you end up talking and talking about all sorts of stuff, but you only have a hint maybe at your true emotions because, I don't know, there could be a whole host of reasons why one or both of you can't, you know, really say what you truly want to say. And that's what this movie is about. And it was just done in a really, really good way. There's nothing groundbreaking about Drinking Buddies. I would give it like 3.5 out of 5, but that's a solid 3.5 out of 5. It's well worth a watch at home for certain. So, you know, video on demand or DVD or whatever, definitely I'd highly recommend it. It's a nice film.
Cool, good stuff. So is that it? Right, okay, brilliant. Right, well, I guess that brings us right along to this week's Journey Through Cinema.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Violence, the word and the act, encased and contained within the supple skin of woman.
Johnny! Let's just time Lancelot as he comes charging to the rescue.
What's going on, Jack?
3.5 seconds, champ. You were great.
What's the matter?
The watch. You won't give it back to me.
Let's have it.
You've got a weird sense of humor.
Try again. I get funnier.
Okay, so there is a clip of Fast the Pussycat, !! !! 1968, directed by Russ Meyer. Now, mine chose this one. as we flicked through.
1966, I believe, for sake of clarity.
66?
Yeah.
Oh, did I say 68? My bad, 1966. So, yeah, Martin shows this one through flicking through the 1001 movies you must see. Now, considering that's the title of the book, and considering my thoughts on this movie, I would kind of question its title as a movie you must see. Just to fill in a bit of background, so this is one of, I guess, the most well-known exploitation pictures of cinema. And in a weird way, it kind of goes full circle with the movie I just spoke about, which is Machete Kills, because watching this movie, it's so clear that, you know, Quentin Tarantino homaged it to the point of almost parody in Death Proof. And of course, yep. Death Proof is part of Grindhouse spawned Machete, which spawned Machete Kills. So, you know, even in 2013, a film like Faster Pussycat Kill Kill is still being referenced and still has its influences, which is really quite incredible considering, you know, ultimately, I guess, the quality of the film. Now, I personally didn't like it. I didn't hate the movie at all because I know it's exploitation cinema, so you're never going to get anything particularly amazing in terms of performance and quality of script, etc. What about you, man? What's your thoughts on it? Did you enjoy it? Was it titillating for you?
I was part tweeting at the same time, if that tells you anything. But no, I mean, it was fairly enjoyable for what it was. Mm-hmm. I guess when we talk about why is it in that list? You know, I've never really watched most exploitation cinema, but I guess, yeah, you say, talk about it's how it, you know, still to this day, it sort of has an influence on certain filmmakers, which is obviously rightly earned its place in that book. But yeah, for what it was quite enjoyable. You know, I thought there was some, you know, for being sort of a exploitation movie, a B movie, there's sort of a few, you know, decent themes in there about, you know, family loyalty, you know, the suffocating, destructive nature of revenge and anger. I thought there were some good sort of things to, if you wanted to pick up out of that, despite it sort of being regarded as low budget and low artistic value.
It's what I find, I don't know what the word is, interesting about it or whatever, is that, you know, it's a male director. Obviously, the women, by the way they dress and by the shape of their bodies, etc., it's all there to have them on the full show. But it's quite, I don't say like a feminist picture, but, you know, these women, they're kicking ass, they're beating up the men. You know, they're driving these fast, cool cars. They're all very liberated. They got, no one's telling these three women what to do. You know, they're not damsels in distress.
No.
Which I guess at the time was very, very fresh and raw. And again, look at Death Proof. It's just exactly the same bloody thing.
Yeah.
But I say you've got a male writer and a male director, so I don't know, you know, I don't really know much about the guy. I never really had much of an interest in, you know, in his other movies, but I just find it a bit. I wonder why he was so interested in telling this story or writing these sort of characters. If it's like a female director, I can understand it, but, you know, a male one, I just don't know. Really, but it's interesting cinema, and I think that's what we want, isn't it, you and I, is to look at movies each week that we wouldn't necessarily, either one of us, go out and watch or buy or get on Netflix or whatever. And I think, you know, I think it's fair to say that neither of us would have probably watched this movie, maybe ever if it wasn't for the fact that we were doing this journey through cinema. So in a way, that's a good thing. I think neither of us hated it.
No, we can both
we can both see, you know, where the influences lie, and you know, some of the directors that we like Tarantino, obviously, you know, they love this sort of stuff. So, you know, I say it's all about things coming full circle.
Yeah, I think I say for you know, being considered an exploitation film, what it is, there's a bit of, you know, comment, you say the women at the time, you know, it's got these women liberated, you know, acting on their own impulse, they're not constrained by the world around them. And there's also, you know, a commentary on sort of, I guess, males at the time in this system, the way there is that young girl and there is that seedy old man, the violent male, but that's, you know, anchored by, you know, they're not all like that. There's, you know, there's good people around. I thought there's some good stuff to pick up on there. Which I actually wasn't expecting when I'd read up on exploitation films and everything, and I wasn't expecting to get a little bit more out of it than what I was just watching.
Yeah, no, I think, and also the fact that it was made on such a budget or low budget, it didn't come across as cheap or tacky, I don't think.
No, it didn't at all. It just came across as a sort of certain restrictive style, I guess. It was just, you know, that's sort of the vision he had, and it was made that way, not that it had to be made that way.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that, mate.
Yeah, so not bad, really. Definitely worth a watch, I think, if you're, you know, if you're wanting to know more about film and learn more about the history of film, it's definitely worth a watch.
Definitely. I mean, it's only what, an hour and 25 minutes as well, and to be fair, it moves. It's never boring, especially if you're not necessarily, you know, used to that style of cinema. I think you're going to be watching it with kind of eyes wide open, thinking, you know, wow, I've never seen anything like this before.
No, there's some eye rolling dialogue which will entertain you a little bit.
Yeah, for certain.
So yeah, I mean, anything else to say on it?
No, not as such. You know, if I was giving it a star rating, I'd probably go straight down the middle, so like a 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'd probably put it around about along there. Yeah, I'd I'd be skirting around the 2 or 3, between the 2 and 3. Yeah.
But I will say this. And I know I've mentioned it before, but Death Proof. This movie is far better than Death Proof. You consider, you know, all the different technology Tarantino had, and all the cast he could have got together, and the experience he has as a filmmaker at that time.
Yeah,
and Death Proof, to my mind anyway, was just a complete dead on arrival sort of film. It was crap. And you think this movie's made like 30, 40 years before, probably a tenth of the budget. And all the rest of it, and it's far more engaging.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I mean, there's some sort of pretty decent, complicated characters. You know, the lead female, the sort of good son characters. They're interesting characters in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not bad at all, really, for its time and for what it was. So does that bring us a close on that? Is there anything else you want to say on?
No. I think that's that brings us to a close. I think it's well discussed.
Okay, so we've got Ross Meyers' Faster Pussycat Kill Kill out of the way, and we're going to dive into the main topic for this week, which I'm sure will prove interesting. And that's comic book films, which is on the back of For the Dark World release.
I gave you my word I would return.
I saw you with the Avengers.
Jane, I fought to protect Earth.
Is that your excuse?
Yes.
It's not terrible.
Before the universe, there was darkness. And it has survived.
Face an enemy known only to a few,
only to one.
After all this time, you come to me for help. I'm Loki. You may have heard of me.
That was from New York.
I like her.
Thor.
Your family. Your world will be extinguished.
It's going to destroy everything.
I'll find a way to save us all.
Thor, the Dark World.
So that was a clip from Thor, the Dark World, the sequel to Thor, the Mighty Avenger, and the second release of Marvel Phase 2 following the Avengers. So, this week we are talking about the validity of the comic book movie genre. I enjoy comic book films. I'm a big fan of Superman and Batman. I like the Marvel films. I don't love them, but we'll get to that in a bit. Rowan's not so much of a fan of, the latest comic book movies to be released. So I'm going to open this up to Rowan now to give us his sort of general impressions, his general thoughts on the genre as a whole. And then we'll lead off from there. So Rowan, take it away.
Okay. So yeah, as Martin said, my issue with comic book movies, I guess, is from 2008 onwards, and specifically, I think the birth of the Marvel takeover of the summer movie experience, and the fact that now you can't go onto a movie blog or go to a movie magazine or listen to a podcast, ironically this one, without the main topic being bloody comic book movies. And it seems that everyone's an expert now because these movies are so successful, and everyone seems to love comic books and the characters and all that sort of stuff. But my question is, and has always been, are they any good at actually being entertainment? Just because it's a comic book character in the title, is it a good film? And my question is, if Iron Man was called Red Robot, would people be obsessed with it? If Thor was called Hammer Man, would people think it was amazing? And if the Avengers were called, Green Giant, Red Robot, and Hammer Man Team Up Part 1, would it get the love fest that it has? My answer to that is probably not. And that's my issue with comic book films, is that the recent batch, at least, to my mind, just in terms of sheer entertainment quality, they're just not good enough. Now, that's not necessarily across the board, but the Marvel ones, I don't think, are particularly good films. And it just drives me mad when all I hear and see is comic book, comic book, comic book, comic book, and these films aren't even particularly good. And the fact that we're already seeing rumours, not even rumours, just, talk about Thor 3 before Thor 2 has even come out. And it's just this production line mentality that the studio has. And of course, if I work for the studio, I'd be doing the exact same thing. I'm not a hypocrite here. I'd want to make as much money as I could while the iron is still hot. And at the moment, the iron has never been hotter, because films like Iron Man 3, it's only movie to cross $1 billion this year. $1.2 billion that movie's taken, which is insane. And I just don't like the fact that all these movies are just being made because they can, in a way. You can, they can just churn them out into what has been called Phase 2 and Phase 3. And you've got, Sony have announced 4 Spider-Man films,
yeah,
which is insane. They just announced 4 movies. We don't know how... The first one, I mean, the Amazing Spider-Man, was utter shit. But it was utter shit. But it made enough money for them to say, hold on, we can make another, we can announce, not just make, we can announce another three with their release dates, you know, like 3 or 4 years ahead of time. And to me, Martin, that's just not right. That's just not right. Because to me, that all that's saying is that all Sony care about is like opening weekend and getting enough money to justify part four coming out and just ramping up enough interest, enough buzz. Because all it is buzz.
Yeah.
No one knows if this is going to be any good, but it's just getting buzz. Having the Spider-Man name in the conversation for the next 4 or 5 years, but without even a thought as to how good the movie is going to be.
Yeah.
And that pisses me off, to be quite frank. That really does piss me off. And as a film fan, I don't want all of my resources to be filled up with the new comic book film just because it's a comic book film and it gets clicks. And that's my issue with it.
Yeah, well, I agree with the, you know, the sort of Sony announcing Amazing Spider-Man 4. It's like, at the moment, it seems they want to get you excited for the new film that's 3 years away, more than they want you to see, more than you want, they want you to enjoy the current film that's about to come out.
Exactly.
You know, if you don't enjoy that current film, it's okay. There's another one that's going to be out.
Yeah.
It's that constant, that constant buzz and hype for it that they're just constantly building. You watch one film and then you know the next one's going to be out soon. So, okay, maybe they'll turn it around. And then you just get into that sort of trap again of, you know, looking forward to the film here, hitting the links, you know, Yahoo get their exclusive trailer release, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. But as, you know, the quality of the genre of the whole, I do disagree with you. And you touched on it earlier, actually, sort of 80s action movies and Cobra. You know, these weren't good films, but when you look back on them, you can still enjoy them for what they are. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the comic book genre is certainly not any worse. And I say it holds more validity, really. There's more quality. I do think that Chris Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy is the pinnacle of the genre. You know, especially
it's the exception for certain. Yeah.
The Dark Knight sort of transcends that genre and becomes something else entirely. I think the Dark Knight Rises, for its faults, tries to be something a lot more. Doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily achieve that, but it does try to be a lot more. I think people who say that, you know, Nolan sort of half-assed the story on that, are just way wide of the mark and slightly a little bit maybe bitter because they didn't get what they wanted.
I think he
tried, you know, really hard to knock that one out of the park and give us something epic. And I love it, but, you know, it has its faults. I accept that.
I think with the Dark Knight Rises, I'm one of those people that was, I don't want to say underwhelmed with it, but I didn't leave the cinema with the joy that I left, you know, 3 years before. 4 years before, whatever it was, with the Dark Knight. And I think, you know, that movie was so, the Dark Knight was so unexpected in terms of its quality. I didn't think, you know, no one knew it was going to be as good as it was, because God damn it, that is a fucking great film. It's not the masterpiece. It's not a five-star perfect movie for me that some people make out, but God damn it, that is a great, great film.
Little issues, but...
Exactly. It's a fucking good film.
As a whole, yeah, it's absolutely incredible.
How do you top that?
Well, The Rises takes the same liberties that The Dark Knight did. You know, how did the Joker get the gas cans on the ferries? We don't really question that because of the rest of the film. Whereas in Rises, there's a few other issues, and it's maybe one too many. But it takes those liberties, but there's one too many, and people sort of question that. But you know, yeah, to me they are the pinnacle. We look at like Avengers. I think that's a really enjoyable film. I hate the distinction of film and movie, but it is a really enjoyable movie. Probably not a great film. And for the most part, I've enjoyed the Marvel films, but they are kind of throwaway. You know, The Incredible Hulk. I didn't really get into Captain America, the first Avenger. I do want to revisit that again, but I didn't really get into it the first time. I thought the ending, the villain, you know, kind of very much a wet fish. It was, you know, that it was just not great. Iron Man 2, as we know, is pretty terrible. But those films, you know, I thought for my girlfriend says that my accent makes me pronounce four as in F-O-R, and it really bugs me every time I say it now. I'm really self-conscious about how I pronounce it, which just makes it worse. That film really focuses on character for me. You know, the third act, the final sort of showdown, yeah, it's not really befitting of a superhero film, but it's more about the character in that film, which I really appreciate, and which why it's my favourite of, you know, sort of phase one. I think they, you know, for the most part, they've tried to really focus on character, but more action than character for the most part. But, you know, as I say, four, Captain America had, you know, quite a lot of it, just really focused on the character. And I think maybe going into phase two, it's become, obviously I haven't seen The Dark World yet, but only commenting on Iron Man 3. It seems to be, again, more spectacle than anything else.
Yeah, so my side to what you just said there is, you say, you talk about character, but for me, that's one of the things I don't get from it, because when I look at those movies, all the characters to me just sound the same. Thor, kind of, he's just, you know, a wisecracking guy. Iron Man, Tony Stark, just a wisecracking guy. You've got, in the Avengers, you've got Bruce Banner and Tony Stark, just, you know, cracking wise all the time. And everyone's so hyper, aware almost of that they're in this comic book movie. So to me, it's all the same. And you could take one action sequence and it could be from any of them. And I think the word I'm looking for is personality. I don't get any personality or uniqueness, for the want of a better word, from any of these Marvel films. I think if you're looking for just, you know, quote, a bit of fun or a bit of entertainment, then yeah, it can give that. But for me, one is okay. You know, one or two that are just, you know, throwaway fun, decent, but nothing special. Yeah, okay. I've got no issue with that. But it's when they get released, you know, two or three a year. Just look at this year. We've had Iron Man 3. We've had Thor 2. We've had The Wolverine. We've had, I mean, maybe I'm missing one. I don't know. But that's at least three big comic book movies. Next year, Captain America 2.
We've had Man of Steel.
Thank you, Man of Steel. I think we need to touch on that in at some point later on as well, because that's almost like a, for me, it's somewhere in between. But yeah, thank you. So we've got Superman, Wolverine, Iron Man, and Thor. Four films in 1 year, and to my mind, they range from, you know, okay, average, to absolutely fucking diabolical in the case of Thor 2. But you know what? I don't want just okay. I want one quality movie. I don't expect to go to the cinema four times and go and see, you know, a walk out thinking, you know, that was all right. No, I think we need more than that. And it's because, to my mind, it's because there's so many now.
I say, can we not look back? You know, we've done the Narnia and Sly podcast. The majority of them films are terrible.
Yeah, but the thing is, the difference is, you know, I wasn't going to cinema then. I was, you know, if I was a 30-year-old man, I might have thought differently.
The time in which you experience those films affects how you look at them individually. So, a terrible Sly film, because you bought it or rented it on Blu-ray, you view very differently from having gone to the cinema and having had that experience, despite the fact that those films from the 80s are probably actually very, you know, a lot worse.
No, I would say this. I don't give a pass to a film that I think is bad now. So, you know, if I'd saw Cobra when I was, I don't know, in my 20s or whatever, in 1986, I probably would have liked it because that was the standard of stuff now. Looking back at it, I would say, yeah, it's massively flawed. I think you have some sort of nostalgia for it, but I would never say that Cobra is a great movie. I would never say, you know what? Cobra is the standard. Cobra is a pass. No, if Cobra came out today, I would give it, I would give it the criticism I think it deserves. But Cobra, even back then, was not taking up all the pages of Variety magazine, and it wasn't made to be the money churner that these movies are today. That's my issue.
Yeah, well, I think, the quality of the films is completely separate from the Hollywood system in how that's built up. You know, if you're looking at the films, if you forget everything else, I think the films provide a lot of enjoyment. They're, for the most part, well-made.
But I just think they're cookie-cutter. That's the thing. It's just they're no different to each other. Iron Man is no different to Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3. Sure, the plot has moved along because it's Iron Man 2 and then it becomes Iron Man 3. So yeah, things have changed, but then compare that to, say, the Dark Knight trilogy, which I have almost nothing bad to say about, but that moves on. It progresses so well. But if the Dark Knight was hardly any different from Batman Begins, it was just another adventure of Batman, would it be as good as we make it out to be? I don't think so. But the fact that they decided to wait 3 years or 4 years, whatever, 3 years, but really build on it. They knew they had something there. They got a director with a vision. They had a good commercial success.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's the key.
They've got a really good cast, quality cast, which the Marvel movies also have. That's one of the things that Marvel do so well, is get these great actors in. And I don't mean fucking Chris Hemsworth. I'm talking about, I guess, people who mostly play the villains in these movies. Their quality, they're picking up a paycheck, and they do add some gravitas to the location stills, and they're pretty much sleepwalking through the movie. But god damn it, they are good actors. A good actor is always gonna be a good actor.
I think there is an issue there with how Marvel treat them. They are doing a good job. They are putting, for at least from my perspective, something, a good standard of quality that I'm happy to pay £7 for and go and be entertained for 2 hours. But there is an issue there, with Marvel. Like, they've changed directors. There's no, Thor's changed directors, Iron Man's changed directors. Getting a director with a vision, like you say, I think very much, let's just get another film out. We've got a bigger plan. And you're looking at now at the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Episodes of that are going to deal with the fallout from For the Dark World. And it's like, how could this not be anything but sort of a mess? But, I gather there's a lot of sort of plot issues with For the Dark World. Is that right? Without spoilers, because obviously I haven't seen it yet.
Plot issues.
The last third's a bit of a mess, isn't it? It doesn't make much sense.
Mate, to my mind, this is in the joke, the entire film's a mess. Obviously, from beginning to end. But I will say, and this is no spoiler, the final third is just crash, bang, boom, landmarks getting knocked down, and nothing making a shred of sense or being any fun. Yeah, exactly. Disaster porn. And that's another thing that I have massive issues with. And that's not just comic book, that's summer movies as a whole.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing almost.
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at sort of The Dark Knight, it had its action pieces, but they were just, they sort of serve a purpose to get the story moving along. There was the Joker's attacks, and it was the impact that it had on Dent and Bruce. Whereas, yeah, I mean, a lot of the Marvel films, it's your big set piece and you move on to the next one.
And I think,
but so, yeah,
I think
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and you're absolutely right. So in a good movie, you know, the action set pieces, they come at the right time. They have some sort of impact on the story as a whole. And they need to be both amazing and jaw-dropping, but also they need to be there for some sort of reason. Whereas I just think with these films, they're just churning them out and they all look the same. I mean, you look at the new Captain America, what's the trailer for that? And what happens at the end? A massive aircraft is crashing into the ground. But that could be from anything. Now, it could have been from the new Star Trek film. It could have been from the new Thor movie. It could have been from a whole host of stuff. So what makes Captain America any different from Thor? Or what makes Thor, I don't mean the character, I mean the movies, any different from Iron Man? And what makes Iron Man any different from the Avengers? And what makes the Avengers any different from, I don't know, whatever else is going to come out? Fucking RIPD, that was based on a comic book. And that was, and everything collapsed in that, and the city got broken in half. Yeah, okay, it was a piece of shit. It's nowhere near the quality of those movies. But ultimately, you know, the action all looks the same. What is differentiating these Marvel films from each other other than the name and the person in the costume? That's what's tiring me down, man.
Yeah, we'll talk about it now because, you know, we mentioned it. And I know that you weren't much of a fan. You're not much of a fan of the director. I enjoyed the film, except its flaws. Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of moments in that. As a Superman fan, I do wish I'd seen sort of more Superman saving people. But there's that moment where he kisses Lois, which isn't earned. And I can buy that moment on, okay, you know, he trusted her with his secret and blah, blah, blah. But it just felt forced. And it's because it's the superhero, it's the girl. You have to have that moment. And that, yeah, that's what they're all like. You've got, you know, Thor's the same, Captain America's the same. And it's kind of my issue with the Amazing Spider-Man reboot as well, which I did enjoy. Mm-hmm. Which I did enjoy in the cinema. But on rewatch, rewatched it twice on Blu-ray, and it's just, I've been utterly bored, and there's just no real reason for it to exist.
Mm-hmm. I hated it.
You know, I know Spider-Man fans, I know a couple, prefer it to the Raimi films. It gives them a version of the character that they prefer, but it's so soon. I mean, it's a bit like Batman Begins and, you know, the Burton Schumacher series. I got what I wanted more out of the character from Nolan's, but there was that massive gap. Whereas the Amazing Spider-Man, it's come out not long after the Raimi's trilogy ended. So for the rest of us who aren't that really bothered, it doesn't really add anything new to the story. It doesn't really give us much more.
Yeah,
and what it promised in the trailers was cut from the film anyway. You know,
if you just actually, you know, look at what happens in the movie, he ends up fighting a CGI lizard that has zero personality, and the lizard turns policemen into other lizards for literally no reason whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's bollocks beyond belief, and to me it says we've got nothing in this film. There's no story. There's no, you know, real climax. We're just going to throw some shit together and make it go bang. And hopefully that'll be enough. Well, no, I'm afraid it's not enough, because I saw a cracking good Spider-Man movie in 2001, and I saw an even better sequel in 2004. So get your fucking act right, is what I say.
Yeah. And you didn't like Man of Steel, did you?
So yeah, I want to touch on Man of Steel, because it is a film that I do want to revisit. I do want to revisit it. And I think in Man of Steel, there was visually a lot to like. I think we've spoken before on this. I think the fact that they didn't copy the Richard Donner version in terms of the visuals and the look and the feel of the planet Krypton and Superman's uniform and just, I guess, the way he acts and the way he talks, I really like that, and that's what I wanted from the movie. I like that they went in a whole new direction. Fantastic. They didn't, you know, they didn't use the same theme tune, which in lead up to it I wasn't keen on. But then, as I say, this is their own movie. They're not trying to copy what's already gone before, and that's fine. You know, Hans Zimmer's a fantastic composer. I think the theme for Man of Steel is really good. I think all the actors do a good job with what they're given, apart from, well, no, Amy Adams is fine, but Lois Lane, I think, is a really underwritten character in this movie. But I think, you know, and I mentioned this before, but the thing that really let me down, with Man of Steel is the final third, when, again, it could be from any movie. It could be from any Michael Bay, it could be from any comic book movie. It's just crash, bang, loud noises. And I wanted so much more from a Superman film. You know, I can forgive Thor and Captain America, all that Marvel shit, for all looking the same and just being the lowest common denominator in terms of what an audience, or what they think an audience expects, or what they think a comic book nerd is going to let them get away with on the blogs, because you know, word of mouth is all they care about, which is, you know, that's fair enough. That's right in a way, because, you know, bottom line, you want to make money. But Man of Steel should have been so much more. It should have risen above that boring formula of just, let's, you know, blow everything up and let's have a massive spectacle at the end, because I just wanted so much more from Superman. And I didn't get that, which is a massive shame. Because I said there's a lot to like in Man of Steel, but knowing how it ends and what it all leads to, it will never be anything more than just an average film for me, despite all the fantastic you know, production value that it has. And it does have a fantastic production value.
Yeah, I agree about the final third. It, you know, I enjoyed it, but it's, you know, I'm actually dreading the day that I get to watch that on Blu-ray on just my 32-inch screen, because by the fifth cinema visit to see the film, you know, the final third was just it was tedious. Mm-hmm. So watching it on Blu-ray, you know, on a much, much smaller screen, it's going to be interesting to see how I sort of get through that. But, you know, I think with Man of Steel, again, you know, I think Snyder did a good job, to be honest. And I think it will have been sort of, you know, studio mandate, give us some action. And that's what they wanted, and that's what, you know, that's what the fans said they wanted, and that's what they got. So I think, you know, for the most part, Snyder did a good, you know, did a good job. The, you know, was issues with, you know, he didn't let moments breathe. That was a real problem for me. But I know there's a lot being cut. There's a lot being left on the cutting room floor, which could solve a lot of the issues that people have sort of had with the film. So it'll be interesting to see if we get, you know, a director's cut. You know, Nolan doesn't do it. You know, Snyder has done it. So it'll be interesting if we get one eventually. I would be interested in seeing that. But I think...
What's your... sorry, Maz, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was going to say, what's your opinion now on, of course, you know, this now Superman versus, or Superman and Batman movie?
You know, on the one hand, you know, I was obviously, as you know, I was really against it. Mm-hmm. As you know, as you talked about in the Flickr and Myth group, and I was really against it. You know, it rushed, just put out there for, because, you know,
like we discussed earlier.
And again, and because Man of Steel, you know, is it, you know, the fact that it didn't really have a script, it seemed like it was reactionary to Man of Steel not making $1 billion. So let's put Batman in it. That's what it seems like.
I completely agree with you.
Someone, you know, I wrote a piece on that, and someone sort of called me an idiot. But as the fact started coming out that there wasn't a script, it still doesn't even have an official title. That that is absolutely must be the case. So, you know, I was hated it, against it, wasn't excited for it. Then Ben Affleck got cast, and I thought, well, this guy turned down Justice League when it was a shit script before. He's a smart guy. There must be something in this that, you know, they've said to him. He must find, and he, you know, he's in massive good standing with Warner Bros. At the moment, so he doesn't need to do this for them. Unless they've promised him, you know, sort of carte blanche to do whatever crazy shit films he wants to do, you know, and spend $300 on a film. But I don't think he's going to do that. So I don't think he had to do this. I think he really wanted to do this. There's something in it that he's seen that has value. You know, that remains to be seen. But, you know, I'm still in two minds about whether, you know, I'm interested in it. I mean, I am interested in it, but, you know, I have my reservations about it. As you were talking about earlier, about, you know, the Marvel films all sort of being the same and the end of Man of Steel all sort of, you know, it could be from any film. My hope is that Ben Affleck gets to direct a solo Batman film and write that himself. And I would love a Batman film that was toned. It's a summer blockbuster, you know, that's what these films are. But maybe tone it down and focus on the world's greatest detective part of that character. If you wrote a really good film, I think Nolan could have done it. Dialed down the action and made more of a detective story. You know, something like Memento meets Batman. People still would have gone because it's a Nolan.
Yes, I would.
But it's a Nolan Batman film. It didn't have to add the action. Nolan's third Batman film, it's a Batman film. People still would have gone. It didn't need the explosions or anything like that. And I think Affleck, if he does get to direct a solo Batman film, has got a good chance to do something like that, to set it apart from everything else. Because obviously, you know, Batman versus Superman, we are probably going to get a lot of explosions. We are going to you know, there's parts of that are just going to seem like any other superhero film, really. And we're bound to get...
Yeah.
God knows how they're going to make it work, because, you know, Superman and Batman can't realistically fight, so God knows what they've got planned. But I would imagine we're going to get some kind of Avengers Cap versus Thor versus Iron Man moment. You know, the money shot, isn't it? But I
think that's the thing.
Affleck's got the opportunity, if he gets that solo film, just to do something different, dial it back, tell an interesting, thought-provoking film, but still Batman. You still can have your little action piece, but I think he's got a good opportunity to do something different. But whether that happens, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point there, Martin. I think, you know, when you release a movie with the word Batman in the title or Dark Knight or whatever, you're instantly going to get bums on seats, yeah?
Yeah.
That's a given. But whether Warners will want to do what you suggested there is obviously a different question, especially if on the other side of the street you've got Marvel doing their thing, and their things is all, it's obviously very light and I guess you'd call it family friendly, and it's all leading to Avengers 2 and Avengers 3. So they've got this roadmap. But it seemed like Warner are having to almost, you know, make a roadmap because their competitors are doing it. So whether we'll see a low-key or less action-focused Batman movie whilst Marvel is still doing their thing remains to be seen. I don't think we will. I think it's going to be very much each one are going to try and outdo each other, which, again, you know, bores me because... to me, it just says we're going to have to get bigger and do this, and that'll work. So then the other person will copy it. And I said, to me, that's not fun. There's no excitement there. But I was going to say something, but I bloody forgotten about. Oh, yeah, that was it. The Wolverine that came out this year. Now, that was a movie which was. Low-key, Wolverine was... Well, there's only two mutants in the film, Wolverine and then this other woman, which, again, was utter useless crap. But at least it wasn't infested with all types of mutant characters. So it's just very low-key. It was set in a place where most Hollywood films don't tend to go. There was only one big action set piece until the end. And to me, that's what I enjoyed about The Wolverine, was this low-key or very much focused and closed take on a iconic comic book character. But even still, the director was forced to cut that movie down to what it was. And what it was, just, I think, a decent action movie, a comic book action movie. But on Blu-ray, there's going to be an extra like 40, 45 minutes, which suggests that the studios don't want to have an interesting non-action filled comic book movie, which you just touched on the point, that's what you'd like to see. But I just wonder if that will ever happen, or will it only be available on Director's Cut Blu-ray?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the Flicker of Myth podcast when The Wolverine came out, and I was harsh on it, but it did bore me. But you know, as I said in sort of the next podcast, to sort of clarify, you know, I appreciate what it was trying to do and what it did do, but it just wasn't very interesting, because I don't think the Wolverine he's not a very interesting character, and certainly after that was his sort of the fifth film featuring him, you know, with Hugh Jackman, there's no interest in that character anymore, and you know, that's why it just didn't do anything for me whatsoever.
They should have made that in 2008, shouldn't they? That's a film they should have made as a first Wolverine spin-off, rather than that fucking trash that they did make.
Yeah, definitely. But yes, I don't think, you know, Fox know where their bread is buttered.
No idea. They've got no idea.
Well, no, it's a superhero film. It's that, you know, they want some action in there, which is why the third act of that film is an utter mess and descends into just lunacy.
Which again could be from any movie.
Yeah. So, you know, would it happen with Batman? I think if it was gonna happen, it probably would have happened with Nolan. But you know, Ben Affleck is trusted by Warner Brothers. Whether this new Warner guy at Warner Brothers would let it happen, who knows? Probably not, because they're summer blockbusters, but one can hope, I guess. But I think if you can a character like Batman is the character you can do it with, because you know that's in his blood as well. But yeah, I mean, dialing it back to overall quality, I think, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what Captain America the Winter Soldier pulls up, you know, what that can pull out of the bag. Not much.
By the way, sorry, mate. I was going to say, by the way, you mentioned earlier that Captain America was one that you didn't really go much on. You know what? I really enjoyed Captain America.
Do you know why?
I saw it twice. I
might turn people off here. I can't stand that sort of over-the-top patriotism.
That's interesting.
And I was switched off from the start. So I do need... But I like Captain America as a character. You know, I loved him in The Avengers. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to Winter Soldier. He's a character I like, so I do need to revisit it again and just sort of.
And the reason I liked it is because the movie had personality. It had character. There was something about it, and that's because I think it was set in the 40s. So you had that fantastic period piece with the music and the costume and the way people speak and things like that. And the technology to a certain extent. I think the Red Skull looked fantastic because it was a real prosthetics rather than just a CGI character, and those sort of things. It wasn't too much loud spectacle action. I think the plot was pretty focused for an origin story. I really thought Captain America was a good adventure movie. You know, fuck it, it's a comic book movie. I don't care about that. To me, it was like a good adventure movie, and I had a lot of fun with it. But...
I didn't. You know, I'm not criticizing the film. I just personally didn't like it. but that's my own sort of issue. In, you know, there's that scene where it's the really over the top American patriotism, and that stuff sort of gets on my nerves a little bit, and I sort of did switch off from it.
But you know that but I guess that's who he is.
It's part. I mean, they say that it's my own personal issue rather than criticizing the film for it. So yeah, as I said, I do want to revisit again. I am looking forward to Winter Soldier because I do like the character.
You know, with me, I watched the Winter Soldier trailer, and the trailer just bored me because it seemed to have no personality and no characteristics sort of his own. It just looks like generic
superhero.
Takes
on people in a room. I absolutely see where you're coming from there, because they all sort of do blend in. There is nothing to really set either of them apart as very unique and different. And that's kind of was my hope for sort of Man of Steel, you know, and it didn't, you know, as much as I did enjoy it, it didn't deliver on that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just another superhero film where I was hoping for something just a lot different that really stood out and was unique, and it didn't really deliver on that. But
I agree. But I do want to watch Man of Steel again. So it's not like I'll never watch it. I know when you and me joke about it on Twitter and stuff.
I mean, you get some stick, don't you, on the on Flickr and Miff and sane and logical commenters. but you know, you like the John. You just got your standards, and that's that. Which, you know, appreciate and respect and agree on a lot of the issues. There was something I was going to say, and that's just taken me off kilter. Right, it's come to mind. As you know, we're saying that a lot of these look the same, the trailers look a little bit the same. One of my sort of hopes, which isn't being fulfilled, is that we get... There's a couple of films I think that DC could bring out if they finally act, which could be very unique and very different. First, least importantly, is The Flash. You know, I think you could do a Flash film which deals with time travel, which would just, you know, really make it a time travel detective story. You know, Barry Allen going, you know, Barry Allen works in a crime lab, having going back, solving his mother's crime and just deal with different time periods. Make it really different. Focus on the time travel, make it really interesting. That could be very different.
True.
If they did it right. And a film which obviously we do need to see, and there's talk of maybe a small cameo, possibly. In an interview from Mark Hughes, Forbes, that he had with Jamie Alexander from who plays Sif in 4, Wonder Woman. We do need a Wonder Woman film. I think, you know, the first female lead superhero film, if they do it right, can be something very unique, very different. And you know, in the case of Wonder Woman, very important. Rowan?
I'm just thinking. Really, you were saying we need a Wonder Woman film. Thinking, I don't know if we need one, but I don't have too much to say on the matter, to be honest, Martin, because you make a Wonder Woman film and then you have to make Wonder Woman 2, and then she has to be part of Avengers 3 or whatever. Not Avengers, the Justice League.
Yeah,
you know, and all that.
But I think the character is an important one, you know, and I think it'll be important for cinema to have a female lead superhero film, and it absolutely needs to be Wonder Woman before it's Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow or other Marvel bollocks.
Yeah,
you know, if it's going to be,
by the way, is one of the worst on-screen characters I have seen. Scarlett Johansson is fucking, in my opinion, is fucking useless in action roles, and that character, Black Widow, is just atrocious, just awful. And she's in Captain America 2, which Oh, yes. God, I forgot about that. So that's alarm bells going off right there, mate, I'm afraid.
Fair enough. I think not just because it's a superhero film, but I think it'd be very important for cinema. You know, the amount of male lead superhero films that we've had, you know, is ridiculous, and we haven't got a female lead. You know, you look at the Hunger Games, you know, films like that where you've got the female lead, you know, it's a female-centric movie. You know, they're important films, I think, whether you like them or not, whether the quality is up to scratch. And I think Wonder Woman would be a massive part of that.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Unique for film as an art to have that. If done right, obviously.
Well, yeah, that's a caveat with all these things, isn't it? But, you know, yeah, fine, make a Wonder Woman film, but as long as she has some sort of personality, and again, it doesn't just end up looking like Thor 5, you know, otherwise, and if it does, you could ask yourself, well, what was the point in that? But, you know, obviously it's all hypothetical. I agree with you. If you make a Wonder Woman or a Flash or whatever, then yeah, make it, but have the guile to make it different. And it's not, everything doesn't have to fucking come together with the sequels, and everything doesn't have to cross over. Why can't things just be on their own? What's wrong with that? Why does everything have to come together for, you know, and end up in a Justice League movie or Avengers 5 or anything like that? That's my problem with all this stuff, is that everything, before it's even made, you're already planning ahead with the sequel and how that's going to tie into something else. And you know what really fucks me off, Martin, is all of these post-credit and pre-credit and fucking bullshit, stay around for the extras. I hate it. I didn't even...
That goes back into what I said earlier. It's about creating buzz for the next film. You've got no time to digest what you've just watched.
Yeah.
You know, the Wolverine, you're getting a clip with Patrick Stewart and...
Ian McKellen,
yeah. And so, you know, if you weren't that hot on the Wolverine, you're going out buzzing about those three back.
Yeah, and it's crazy, because why can't you just go to the cinema and like the Wolverine and go home and think, yeah, the Wolverine was a decent movie, rather than, oh, fuck, the Wolverine? Oh, God, I can't wait for X-Men Last... what's it called? Days of Future Past. Oh, God, I watched X-Men Days of Future Past and then said the Wolverine. Oh, what a waste of time that was. When's X-Men Days of Future Past coming out? And you know what's going to happen? At the end of Days of Future Past, during the middle of the sequence, the credit sequence, fucking the next X-Men movie or whatever it is, there'll be a trailer for that. You think, oh, God, X-Men Days of Future Past, why have I just watched that? I need to see part two. I need to see it now. It's all wrong. It's bullshit. But yes, it gets people talking. It gets people talking. It gets the blogs are buzzing. You know, it gets all that sort of stuff. It teases all these sort of things. It's very, very clever marketing. It's very clever marketing. But I feel the cleverer the marketing get, the worse the movies get, or the less attention goes into the quality of the film, and the more attention goes into the 10-second teaser for the teaser trailer on Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, it's a focus on, you know, they're thinking so far ahead that not everything's going into what they've got right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know I've obviously probably come across as, we've probably come across as maybe Nolan kiss asses for any of the comic book fans out there, but, you know, that was Nolan's quality, one film at a time, everything in this film, and then If there's a next film,
yes,
do
exactly
that when it comes. So that's how, you know, that's how films should be made.
Yeah, and you look at Christopher Nolan. In between the first two Batman, he made The Prestige.
Yeah.
And in between the second and third Batman, he made Inception, for shit's sake. Fucking Inception! What an amazing film that turned out to be. And you know, and he made Inception. It was a ginormous hit. And then he moved on to a third Batman film. He wasn't just focusing all his attention on Batman 3. He moved on, did something amazing, came back. Okay, what are we going to do with this? It's going to be I've told Warner this is going to be my last movie. I'm not returning. This is it. This is my trilogy. We all know this won't be the last time we see Batman on screen, which obviously turned out to be true. But I'm going to make the trilogy I want to make, and there's not going to be a post-credit sequence in my trilogy. Thanks very much.
Yeah, well, I guess that sort of sums up our feelings on the comic book genre then. Roman doesn't hate it, but he wants better quality. I accept what we've got as being enjoyable for what it is. But do wish in certain areas for a little bit higher, aim higher. You know, there's that famous quote, you know, from sort of Joel Schumacher making Batman and Robin, you know, before every scene, it's out, this is just a comic book movie. and sometimes there's, it feels like some fans want that as well. For like right now, it's like, well, it's, you know, this is just a comic book movie. Why has it got to have this hyper real? Why has it got to be pretend to be real? They just work better. Like they have more, you know, as a fan of filming, just they have more emotional impact, I think, when they're trying to be real. And that was one of the things I loved most about 4. It was this crazy sci-fi world. But for me, it treated the characters as very real, this very emotional, dysfunctional, you know, family dynamic, which made it very real to me, which is why, for me, it stands far and away the best of Phase 1 of Marvel. And I've seen it elsewhere, you know, fans complaining that, you know, some of the things in the Dark Knight, they were trying to go too real with it, but, you know, they were still true to the characters, but being real allowed them to make a great film, not just a comic book movie, and they should be aiming higher than, you know, I know Marvel like to be, you know, literal comic book movies come to life, but I think we can have both. There's room for both. Some characters are more suited to the realism angle, and others aren't.
Yeah, exactly. That's how, you know, look at Batman. The thing with Batman is he has no special powers. He's just a man. At the end of the day, you know, he doesn't fly. He doesn't have a rocket suit. He's not going into space or whatever. He's just a bloke, and that's what I think it suits him well. Which you couldn't have that with, say, Thor and Iron Man. You need to have that edge, that almost like that I don't want to say silliness, but, you know, that escape from reality, which is fine. I go to the cinema to have an escape from reality. That's what I want, but only if it's something I haven't seen before. That's the problem, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we're going to bring it to an end there, really.
Cool.
I think we've had a bit of a good discussion there, so we'll bring that to a close. And Rowan, do you want to get your 1001 Movies book to hand, and we shall pick next week's topic, or next week's film, shall we say?
Here we go. And I've landed on page 419. So, okay, here we go. We're going for HUD. 1963, starring Paul Newman. Western. I've got it, but I've never seen it, so that's good.
I've not seen it either. So, okay, so next week's Journey Through Cinema film is HUD. Brilliant. And next week's topic will also be the films of Alfonso Cuarón in time for Gravity's release, so which is out on Friday. So that's next week's films and topic covered. So thank you for joining us. I'm Martin Deer, and I was with the Rowan Morby.
The Rowan Morby.
Okay, so thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want wild living fast, and if you want to end up giving your all, let me call. Pussycat is living reckless. Pussycat is right high. just you try. It's sad she doesn't say what's wrong from right. She's running fast and free, child of the night. In her life there'll be no time for love. You'll never take her, make up your mind. You will find pussycat, she's living reckless. Pussycat, she's riding high. If you think that you can tame her, well, just you try. Yeah, just you try. Come on and come on and try. Yeah, come on and try. Yeah, come on and try.